Visit our website at oalaig.org, where you'll find three separate speaker feeds with over 200 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active.
I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Jim.
I don't care. Whatever you...
I'll give you a five-minute warning.
Give me a
five-minute
warning.
Five.
Okay. Well, I am a compulsive overeater, and my name is Jim. That's correct. Both those things are correct. I would add a couple things. I'm an enthusiastic and grateful member of Overeaters Anonymous. I love this program. I'm crazy about it. I just can't seem to get enough of it anymore. And I'm here as a result of a change in my attitude, because I'm going to guarantee you that isn't how I felt when I first came in these rooms. And I'll tell you my story as best I can remember it. I was actually sent here by my AA sponsor, who got tired of listening to me whine about all my problems with compulsive overeating. And he was not a compulsive overeater, but I tried to make one out of it, and and it didn't work worth a damn. And he kept sending me back to you, and my attitude just got worse and worse. And finally, I told him, don't send me to OA anymore. I don't belong there. I'm not that sick. I'm not as sick as you guys. I just don't belong there, and it's just pissing me off, so forget it and drop it. I said, okay, that's fine with me. You don't want to go, don't go. At that time, I weighed 255 pounds. I had had two heart operations as a result of my health, the obesity in my health. And so I then developed onset diabetes as a result of the obesity. And my heart doctor, when he found out that I had contracted the onset diabetes, his exact words were, well, the clock is running on you now. And that scared the hell out of me. It's really scared the hell out of me. I went back to my AA sponsor, who was a grumpy old doctor, pain in the ass. I told him, I said, well, now I got diabetes, and maybe I'm ready to try OA again. And so he said, I'll tell you what. He said, I'm not going to tell you what to do anymore. But he said, if you're going to go back there, he said, why don't you try changing your attitude and go into a meeting and see what you can contribute rather than what you can take away. And I said, well, that sounds like a good idea. Maybe I'll try that. So I did. Off I went to an OA meeting. And of course, being in another 12-step program, I knew what you guys did in here. I just didn't want to do it. But I came in here with a different attitude. I don't remember exactly what I did the first meeting I went to down in Orange County, but I don't know, it was greeting people at the door and setting up chairs, just something I could do and to try to change my attitude. And boy, it just worked marvelously. I couldn't believe it. I just had a whole different perception of what was going on here. I thought, well, gee, this is going so good. Maybe I better get myself an OA sponsor. And so I went back to my AA sponsor, and a guy that he sponsored named Scott R. was in this program at the time. Scott's dead now, and so is Paul. They're both gone now. But so he hooked me up with Scott, and Scott was my first OA sponsor. So I thought, boy, this is great. You got a sponsor, and got a meeting I'm going to, and I'm starting to feel a little better about things. But I wasn't, I wasn't abstinent. I wasn't abstinent. And what I say here is just this is just me. I'm not trying to tell anybody what to do or that I have some view of this program that's better than anybody else's, because I don't. I'm just telling you what works for me and how it developed. I consider abstinence to be a spiritual condition. That's it, period. There's no more to it. And I'll go into how I developed that perception of this thing. Anyway, and part of it is this relationship with my first sponsor. So the first night, first day of my abstinence, I was home, and I could always go, I could have a pretty good breakfast, and nothing in between, and then a pretty good lunch, nothing in between, and a dinner, and there'd be a little gap, and then, bang, it would start. And boy, it would go on till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. I'd just sit and eat in front of the TV while the rest of my family was in bed asleep, and that's how I'd done it for years. And so I've been around this program a little over 10 years. I've been abstinent 10 years. So that went on, and I'm 66, so I was well into my older years when I got to do that. So I had done this all my life. It was, and to think that coming to a meeting and getting a sponsor was going to stop it was pretty far-fetched to me. Anyway, this first day that I mark as my abstinence, I got through the evening meal, went, and a couple hours expired, and I headed right into the kitchen, which I normally did. That's what I always did. And I got into the kitchen, and I thought, well, Scott told me to call him before I did something, not after I did something, because he couldn't help me there. So I thought, well, you know, I don't know what he could possibly say that's going to stop this thing. But I'm going to, he asked me to do it, and I was willing to listen. I was willing to listen, and or willing to take the action, should I say. So I called him up, and I said, Scott, you know what? I said, I'm standing in the kitchen, and I know full well what I'm going to do after I'm done talking to you. You told me to call you before I did it, rather than after. And so I thought I'd call you and see what you had to say. And he said, you better start praying. And that was the end of the conversation. That's all I remember. That was the end of the conversation. And I stood in that kitchen for a minute. I said, well, geez, that's the dumbest damn thing I ever heard in my life. How would anybody ever think that's going to stop? You know, that's never going to work. It just isn't going to work. It's ridiculous. And I couldn't think of any prayers to say at that moment. So I just kind of dreamed one up. And I said, I was just willing to try it. I didn't have any faith that this thing was going to work at all. And so I said this. I said, God, relieve me of this obsession to eat compulsively. That's all I said. That's all I could think to say. And I stood in that kitchen for about, I don't know how long. It wasn't long. 3, 4, 5 minutes. And walked out of that kitchen, and I have been abstinent every day since. I just couldn't believe it. I could not believe something that simple would work. And so I couldn't wait to get back to my AA sponsor and tell him how great I was doing in OA. You know, I got it. And in fact, he always used to tell me. He said, "Well, AA stands for altered attitudes, altered attitudes." And so I thought, when I came into OA, I thought, "Well, I'm going to use that here too." So I say to you that OA to me stands for an overhauled attitude. That's what I've had here. It's overhauled my attitude. And so I see things differently today than when I did. My thinking is diametrically opposed to what I thought when I came in here. It's changed. Things that I thought were good, I now think are bad. Things that I thought were bad, I now think are good. It's changed, completely changed. And so off I went. And I lost touch with Scott and I thought, well, he suggested I get a sponsor closer to home. So I got it. I needed a sponsor. I knew I needed a sponsor, and I was afraid to wait too long to get another sponsor because I was so new here. So I grabbed the first guy I could, a fellow named Mike, and he was a wonderful sponsor. He took me through the steps, told me everything he knew about the program. We had a wonderful relationship. And I'm always grateful to him. I'm always grateful to both those guys. And he also drifted away from the program. He left the program, and again, I was left without a sponsor. And so I couldn't go with him. I just could not go with him there. And I called him and I said, you know, Mike, I love you and I appreciate everything you've done for me, but I have to get another sponsor. I have to maintain myself here. And he said, fine, I understand. I said, well, let's be friends and whatever. And so I got another sponsor. And I've had that sponsor up till today. And that's Spencer W. from Santa Barbara. And I don't know if he's been here, but a lot of you know him. And, you know, we've had a long, very long relationship. And so, I'll tell you a little bit more about Mike. Mike left the program and then came back some years later. And I ended up being his sponsor. And that was great. And I thought, I first thought was I'm going to pay him back for what he did to me. But actually, what I did was I thought, boy, what a gift this is that I have the opportunity now to give back to somebody that gave to me. That's really how I reflect on it today. And so I did, and we had a relationship for a time. And anyway, so that was my early sponsorship thing. Anyway, I began to lose one of the symptoms here that's very visible and gets a lot of attention, but I've come to understand today it's only a symptom, and that was my weight. I do not for a minute believe that everybody in this world that is obese is a compulsive overeater. I just don't. I don't believe that. Some people, we're just different, and I stopped trying to judge people by how much they weigh or how much they've lost. I don't think weight loss means you're absent. It doesn't. It doesn't. I've given that up. I can't see abstinence. I believe, for me anyway, abstinence is invisible. I cannot see abstinence. I just cannot see it. It's a spiritual condition which I cannot see until you tell me, until you get up here and you tell me, or you tell me in a conversation. Then I know. But me holding up a picture of myself at 255 pounds and then standing here and not having the weight does not mean necessarily that I'm abstinent. I have done that before in my life. I have lost a lot of weight and then put it all back on again and then some. So I've given up that pastime, I guess. And I've come to understand it's just one of many symptoms that compulsive overeaters can have. Unfortunately, it's a visible one. And a lot of judgment, I think, on my part went on by being able to see that. And I don't think any doctor in his right mind would ever make a diagnosis based on one symptom. And so I had to put weight into its perspective here. And I think a lot of people come in that are, you know, bulimic, anorexic. I have a guy I sponsor that's never been overweight in his life, and he's a stone-cold compulsive overeater. And I, you know, there's just no way of recognizing it. So it's interesting, these 12-step programs, especially here, we don't really diagnose compulsive overeating as a disease. We're not able to diagnose it. You don't become a compulsive overeater until you raise your hand and say you're a compulsive overeater. So it's kind of a sick person diagnosing himself and then asking some other sick son of a bitch to try to help him get well. I don't know how that works. I don't know how it works. But it works. It works. It's amazing. It absolutely amazes me about this 12-step process. It just absolutely amazes me. The other thing I am thinking about as I go along, as I talk to you about that, is this: this disease certainly has effects on my perception, and I think it's always interesting where I can have a guy that I sponsor call me. And tell me a problem, and boy, I can come up with the most brilliant answer you've ever heard just like that. It just amazes me. I'm just, you know, really impressed with myself when I do that. I'm just amazed. Until I have the exact same problem 5 minutes later. And I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue what the solution is. I do not have a clue until I call my sponsor. And then he tells me, and I said, well, I knew that. Why couldn't I come up with that on my own? And it just doesn't work that way. It does not work that way. It, it, My connection to my higher power is through you guys, through my sponsor. And if I had a direct line to God, which I don't, but if I did, believe me, I would not be in OA. I wouldn't need you guys. So I come here to hear from my higher power. I pray and I meditate, but I've never had a direct communication with God. I just have not had him directly talk to me. But I feel when I come here, or when I interact with my sponsor, I'm interacting with my higher power. That's how my feeling of this thing is. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the steps, and the steps were very important to me. And I use them every day. I make a game out of it, trying to, you know, fit my higher power into different parts of my life with the use of the steps, which makes it a little easier. When I was new, I remember talking to my sponsor. I said, well, you know, I've got so many problems here, and then there's these 12 steps. How do you know which step to put which, you know, how do you match, you know, it's just so confusing. And he said, Jim, why don't you just pick a number between 1 and 12? And that'll be your solution to that problem. And I said, well, that's pretty simple. And that works great for me. It just works wonderfully, you know. And that's what I do. I kind of make a game out of it. Anyway, my belief is this. That the steps are the way we communicate with each other. They're communication tools in a way. I'm not redefining them. I'm just telling you, for me, they're communication tools. Like when newcomers come in and they're doing a first step, they don't even know it. You know, it gives us... And by the way, newcomers are just extremely important here. They're extremely important because if you didn't come here, there'd be nobody to do a 12-step with. We wouldn't have anybody to do a 12-step with to carry the message to. We're carrying the message to newcomers. So by you being here, we're giving us an opportunity to do our 12-step. So it's a very important process. But that's how we communicate. You know, you do a first, I do a 12. You know, I communicate with my sponsor with a fourth and a fifth, and I communicate with my higher power with an 11th, or a sixth and a seventh, and 11th. And so, to me, they look like communications tools, and that's how I look at them. And then we have the 12 traditions, and that's the way I try to conduct my relationships in here, or how we do that as a group. We do the steps as individuals, and traditions as a group. But I want to talk a little bit about the traditions too. I've been married for 43 years. I just got a divorce here about a year ago. And so it's a big change for me, big change. And we're both at, my ex-wife and I are both at ease. We're good friends. And it was time to go our own way. So that's the best I can tell you. I'm not telling you I didn't contribute to it or anything else. I'm just telling you that's the way it is today. So she's an Al-Anon. I'm an Al-Anon, I'm an OA, and so we found a way to smooth this thing over and communicate by virtue of our both our programs. Anyway, so that's that story. Now, the interesting part of this is I'm dating. Here I am, 66 years old, I'm dating. And it's so much damn fun, I can't even tell you, right? I mean, I haven't had so much fun since I was 16. I just, that excitement of dating again doesn't go away with age, believe me. It's a very exciting process. And I'm dating a girl now, we've been dating for a while, and she's also in program. She's a very serious program person and a little too serious sometimes. But anyway, she came up with this bright idea that, well, listen, since these traditions are for relationships, she had this workbook where she used with her sponsor that actually applied the traditions to, a relationship, a specific relationship, a man and a woman. So we're doing that together now. We're doing that workbook together. We're using the traditions of this program to have boundaries and limits and how we do our relationship. And it's working great so far. We're only on the first edition, but it's working good. But next time I come, I'll let you know how it's going. So, getting back to recovery. Let's see. Well, I get talk a little bit more about this idea of me defining abstinence as being a spiritual condition. We were talking before the meeting. I can find that I have a lot of differences with OA, and I spent a lot of time trying to find what wasn't right in here. But my attitude has changed over the years, and a lot of things I still do not agree with in OA. I'm not trying to voice my opinion, I'm just telling you my experience here. I now have also changed my attitude about that. I still disagree with things in OA, but I'm no longer in here looking for them anymore. I'm looking for what's right here, and then I expand on that, okay? And that's a big shift for me. And the reason I bring that up is because I was spending so much time analyzing everything here and trying to find fault with it, it almost drove me right off the door. And there's plenty to find fault with if you're looking for it. And I found a lot of it. But I really had to change my attitude about it. So a buddy of mine in OA down in Orange County, I says, you know, you go where the love is. You go where the love is. Not what you think it is. You go where the love is. And this is where it is, in these rooms. You know? And so that's what I want. And so I'm willing to change my attitude and look for what's right in here. So, if abstinence is a spiritual condition, if it's a spiritual condition for me, then I have to define it not as merely the act of stopping compulsive eating. That didn't work for me. If it was that simple, why would I need OA? I don't need OA because I can stop. I have stopped compulsive. I can do that. The problem is I can't do it for long periods of time. I've never done it for 10 years. So for myself, I had to redefine that. It is the now I define it as the God-given power to stop eating compulsively. That makes much more sense to me. Because I can't look at it as something I'm going to achieve through willpower and some crazy food plan or weighing myself every day. That is not going to do it for me. I've had to find a spiritual solution here to this, which I believe to be a medical problem. I have a medical problem. I have an abnormal reaction to compulsive overeating. It's an abnormal reaction. I can't give you a medical description of it, but that's what it is to me. I am not addicted to food. I have never considered myself a food addict of any sort at all. I am addicted to compulsive overeating. That's what I'm addicted to. If I were to think that I was addicted to food, I think I would have a really serious problem, very serious problem, because the only solution I could find to that would be to stop eating totally. I think I started to believe that somehow in OA we had found some magic solution where we could indulge in a substance three times a day to which we were addicted, and nothing happened. It's like saying a heroin addict can shoot up three times a day and not go, and that was it. That's all it can do. And I just don't believe that. I don't believe it. And I have a hard time believing that God would create me an individual or a human being that needed food to exist and have me be addicted to it. I just couldn't incorporate that in my recovery. So I'm addicted to the act of compulsive overeating. And therefore, if that's the case, and it is my thinking that is the case, I have a food plan, by the way. It's three moderate meals a day, nothing in between. And I allow myself one snack, and it depends on just timing. If I'm traveling or something, and I, I'll have a snack sometimes and then to get me through to the meal or whatever. So most of the time I don't do it, but it's available to me. But that's basically my food plan. I do not indulge in any recreational sugar, caffeine, white bread, aspartame. That's pretty much it. So it's pretty simple. I don't weigh and measure food or anything of the sort. It's a pretty simple food plan. But I guess my point is here is this. Me adhering to that food plan and then losing weight is not abstinence to me. It's not abstinence. That's a diet and the results of a diet. So I think and I incorporate into my program this idea that my food plan and adhering to it is only a vehicle to support my abstinence, which is spiritual. That's all. It just takes away a block that is between me and my higher power. And I find the solution there. That's where I find my solution. So I think weight loss is fine. I don't have any argument with it. You want to lose weight? That's fine with me. I was happy to have weight loss, but it was just a side benefit of what I was doing here. It wasn't ever my primary goal here. And I know what I weigh, but I don't think it's any of my business. It's just none of my business. It's not. When I go to the doctor, they weigh me, they tell me, and I've just taken the position that I'm an interested observer in my higher power's work. That's how I look at it. You know, so I weigh. That's what I weigh. That's what he wants me to weigh. That's fine with me. I didn't come here to lose 100 pounds or anything of the sort. That's what happened, but I didn't come here to do it. And so I don't weigh myself. When I start thinking, when I thought in the past of doing that, I think that's an ego pursuit. That's something he's not involved in. That's something I'm pursuing, and it's distracting me from recovery here. And so I just don't do it. And I like the idea of just being an interested observer here. It makes it very comfortable for me in that sense with the weight thing. So that's how I look at the weight and the food thing. Anyway, I don't know how much time I got left here, but I'd like to share. I always like to share. We have tools. Our tools, our list of tools we use here, and I add two more tools to that, which are very important. In fact, they're right on the top of the list. The first one is prayer, and the other one is exercise. And so I have. You know, I have my tools. I just add those two to my list. That's all. I'm not trying to change OA's tools. I'm giving that up. I want to talk a little bit about exercise and how it evolved and how I took something. And I told you I played this game with the steps and try to incorporate different things into my program and make them spiritual. And getting back to that food plan just a minute before I get on this exercise thing. The way I make a food plan spiritual is pretty simple. I share it with my higher power. And this is something I certainly pray and meditate. I want to tell you how I conduct a meal, just because it's important to me. It's become more important as time goes on. I ask before I touch food, before a meal, I get in touch with my higher power. I do some prayer and meditation. I ask him for an abstinent, moderate, and spiritual meal. And if I have to say those prayers a few times to get my head cleared and make contact, that's what I do. And then I go ahead and I have my meal, and I consider it to be a spiritual activity. It's a spiritual activity. That's what it is, period. It has a beginning, has an end. It's time with my higher power. That's it. And the in-between starts. So that worked great. I just worked so damn well. It's just unbelievable. I've been doing it ever since I got abstinent. It just works great. And I consider that meal. Well, anyway, some time back here, I got to thinking one day, I thought, geez, you know, it's so wonderful to have this connection with my higher power and this spiritual activity I've made this meal out of. I've never once thought of inviting my higher power to come to and join me in the meal. And I said, that's kind of rude. It's really rude. If I were your higher power, and I was giving you this meal and giving it to you to nourish yourself and so forth, it'd be kind of nice if you invited me. I'd feel a little put off if you didn't invite me. So I thought, I'm going to try that. And so that's what I've been doing for the last, I don't know, a couple of years, I guess. It's just kind of an expansion of that. So I say, God, please come and join me, in this meal that you're providing me. You're providing me with this wonderful meal, and I'd like you to join me and share in this experience of abstinence, this wonderful gift that you've given me. I want you to share. Come and share it with me. And I can't tell you, I don't think, I'll try, what a wonderful experience that is. There is no danger there. There's no threat from food. There's no fear of going off on a bit. Nothing. It's just a very calm, peaceful, serene experience, having that meal. I look forward to that meal 3 times a day, but not necessarily, it's not for the food and the nourishment. And I get hungry and I like food. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's a very special time of the day that I share with my higher power. And he shares with me. And it has made this thing so easy. I mean, it's just a very pleasurable experience. And I recommend it real highly if you want to try it. Anyway, that works well for me. That's what I do. And I'm going to stop here just because I only got a few minutes. I want to talk about exercise just a little bit because it's been a big part of what happened here. That old doctor sponsor of mine, I wrestled with low-grade depression most of my life, and I went tried to con him out of some medication one time for the depression. And I say he's the biggest pain in the ass in my life. He would have no part of it, and he suggested I try exercising. Well, I mean, I was 255 pounds. I'd had 2 heart operations. I'd never exercised in my life. And I thought, what is this guy talking about? He's trying to kill me here, And so I thought, I was willing to try it, and I walked around the block, and I was just sweating profusely, and that's all I could do. That's all I could do. And anyway, he hooked me up with another sobriety brother of mine who was a runner, and I started following him around the track. I walked around, the track and followed him around. And one day he asked me to run a quarter of a mile. He said, you've been walking around this track forever. He says, you'd probably be capable of running a quarter mile. I said, well, Chris, that's a great idea, except for one thing. You don't understand. I've got heart problems. And, I know that my heart doctor would never, ever approve of me trying to run. And he said, why don't you go ask him? I said, well, I will. And so My heart doctor is a guy named Greg Thomas down in Orange County. He's a friend of mine now. He's amazed by what you guys have done with me, I guess. So I went to Greg. I said, Greg, I said, I got this buddy and this crazy sponsor is also a doctor, and they're asking me, they were kind of encouraging me to start running. And I told them that you would never, ever approve of that. You would never approve of that because I've got heart problems. And he hesitated for a minute. He said, Jim, considering the condition you're in, anything would be worth the risk. So off I went running. And, it just one thing turned into another. And I'm not a marathon runner or anything of the sort. I'm not trying to impress you here much. But I'm at 66, I'm striving to be a competitive 10K runner. That's what I want to be. I'm a 10K runner, and I'm trying to be competitive. I got a coach, and I work at it very hard. But anyway, I decided that would be the time for me to do my 11th step, that to make it spiritual, to make it part of, it's not just exercise anymore, it's spiritual activity, just like the meal thing, you know what I mean? And so I do my prayer and meditation, and while I'm running in the morning and so forth, and it worked great. It worked great. Anyway, I lost my running partner, Chris, and I went back to my sponsor. I said, well, I lost my running partner. I really need somebody to kind of encourage me. He says, well, why don't you, make this your 11-step time? And I did that, and that worked good. And I went back, and I told him, well, that's working fine, too. And so it worked so well, I thought I would make my higher power my running partner since I didn't have one. So I asked him, and he didn't actually tell me that he was. But Funniest thing, I always do 11 steps in the morning. I said, well, God, I'm seeking through this prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with you, praying only for knowledge of your will for me. Now, I found a little loophole in the 11th step, by the way. If you want me to do this, if you really want me to get up out of this warm bed and go out in the cold and run in the morning, you're going to have to give me the power to do it. You're going to have to give me the power to do it. And I wait a while, and then I put on my running shoes, and off I go. And he has never missed a run. In 10 years, he has never missed a run. And so, what I'm trying to tell you, this is how I put spiritual content into that. So it's no longer running or exercise or anything. It's spiritual activity. It's just the action part of my 11th step. That's all. And so that also has worked well for me. So how much time do I have left now? Am I all zero? Well, I guess it's time to stop. Anyway, I want to tell you what a fun it is to come down here. Great group, see old people that I know, not old age-wise, but people that I see. This is a very small world in these 12-step programs, and it's just always a pleasure to see people I know and so forth and so on. So I'm just, I love you all very much. I love this program, and I hope you catch that same enthusiasm that I have for this program if you're new. And that's what we really share here, is our enthusiasm for this program. And I'm glad I was here to share mine with you tonight. Thanks.